This morning, I'm going to talk about case 3 of the Blue Cliff Record. This is an English translation of the Blue Cliff Record. There are several now. When this book came out, there were Thomas Cleary's. I think it was the only one. So let me read the case to you. This case is called Master Ma is Unwell. Here's what is the pointer. The great function appears without abiding by fixed principles. This way will do, not this way will do too. This is too diffuse. This way won't do, nor this way won't do either. This is too cut off. Without treading these two paths, what would be right? Please test. I cite this for you to see. So here's what's called the case. Great Master Ma was unwell. The temple superintendent asked him, "Teacher, how has your venerable health been these recent days?" The great Master Ma said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." He said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." So this is Master Ma's response. So what is this case about? Essentially, the case is about how we live our lives. That's the case. Actually, most koans are about how we live our lives, some aspect of this or that. But they're tough to understand. So here we have Master Ma, and he's talking about how he meets his life, how he meets this life of being well or sick or having likes or dislikes. So Master Ma, he's a very famous Zen ancestor, and one of the things that he's known for, he would say, it is not mind, not Buddha. That was what he would always say for a long time. He'd say, not mind, not Buddha. So one day, someone asked him about it, and he said, well, actually, it's not about not mind, not Buddha. So when we say not mind, not Buddha, he said, well, I only said that because I said this to keep the babies from crying. So, well, what is not mind, not Buddha? So, it's about this notion that we tend to say or understand our life about our mind, our own body and mind. Our practice, we say, oh, it's about our mind. Or we say it's about Buddha, something outside the self. So, as you say, when I don't want the babies to cry, basically it's like giving us something to suck on. We say, oh, I'm going to suck on this. I'm going to think about this. This is not mine, not Buddha. How does that work? Not me, not it. Not inside, not outside. Buddha, not outside the self. The mind, inside the self or outside the self. I was just reading this sutra called the Sarvagama Sutra, and Ananda is having this dialogue. Ananda was primary disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha, so he's having a dialogue with Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni says, well, where is your mind? So Ananda comes up with all these convoluted things, and he's actually pretty smart because he keeps coming up with stuff. Like he'll say something and the Buddha will say, oh no, that's not true. It's impossible that the mind is inside you. So he'd come up a whole new argument, and then the Buddha would say, no, it's impossible that the mind is outside. And then he'd come up a whole new thing, and the Buddha would say, no, it's impossible that it's this, it's impossible that it's that. So this way that we keep trying to figure this out. So Master Ma would say, I said this to keep the babies from crying. So then he said, well, if it's not about that anymore, if it's not about this question of, it's not about your mind, nor is it about the Buddha being not mind, not Buddha. He said, this person said, well, what is it? And then Master Ma said, there is nothing. So he said, there is nothing. So it's not this and it's not that. So where are we, right? It's not the mind, it's not Buddha, it's not this, it's not that, it's not nothing. So then the person who was talking to him said, well, okay, was there some deeper teaching in all of this? I mean, what, you know, what do you say now? And Master Ma said, I would say just meet each moment. So now that's really simple, right? That's very clear. It's not abstract. Just meet each moment. So that's about our lives. Just meet each moment. All three of these sayings are about our lives, but this is very clear. The problem is we don't know how to meet each moment. So that's the tough part. But Master Ma said, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, which is about meeting each moment. So this is about how we meet our life, how we meet each moment. All the Dharma teachings are about meeting this life. All our Dharma teachings and teachers are about how we meet this life, how we understand the nature of this life. So Shakyamuni Buddha, all the ancestors that followed, all they're doing is trying to talk to us about how we apply the Dharma. And all the Dharma is about reality, things just as they are. And everybody has slightly maybe different versions, different schools have slightly different versions about what they understand that to be. But I would say essentially, certainly in the Mahayana schools, what we're talking about is this complete network of relationships that make up our life. So how we meet our life has to include the totality of this network. That's how we're skillful. We talked about Avalokiteshvara, we talked about hearing the cries of the world, responding to the cries of the world. How do we respond to the cries of the world? How do we respond to our own cries? How do we hear this? Well, the only way that, from a Buddhist perspective, that we understand and hear this has to be in relationship to this network, has to be in relationship to the totality. So it can't be just a rule. It can't be just inside-outside. It can't be some boundary here or there. It has to encompass the totality. So instead of Genja Kōan, to carry the self forward is delusion. That's this way in which we make it this or that. We make up a rule. You know, we say, well, the precept is not to kill. I will never, ever, ever kill. But what does that mean? That becomes a koan too. We don't know. How do we know what the koan means? The only way we can know what the koan means, really means, has to do with this network. It has to do with the totality of our lives. It has to do with letting things come forward and meet us and discerning what the appropriate action is in this whole relationship. The precepts are things that we use to discern what is right within the context of this totality. It's not outside. It's not like a rule that's outside of the totality of our life. It has to be part of our life. It has to inform the nature of our experience, which includes all of our life. So Master Ma is talking about this totality. He says, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. He says, I keep the babies from crying. We're all babies. We're all crying. Ooh, ooh, ooh. My life, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, we're all crying. We need something to suck on. We need these forms, this practice, these ideas, these people who went before us, like Master Ma, the ancestors who went before us. Say, I'll give you pacifier, you know. These are skillful means. So the Lotus Sutra, the probably heard this story about all the kids in the burning house, and they're like having a grand old time. And when they describe this in the Lotus Sutra, the house is burning down, and there are bugs in the house, and termites falling out of the walls, and snakes, and all sorts of grisly, ghastly, disgusting things are going on in the house, and the kids are just like having a grand time. They're like totally oblivious to it. So the Buddha says, you know, okay, I'm going to figure out something that they want to get them out of the house. Is this lying? Is it a deception? If the Buddha says, you know, hey kids, look, I got some candy out here. Like like trick or treat, you know. Come on out here. Got some Snickers bars. So they all come tumbling out of the house. They're like, what's up with this? But this house that we live in, this burning house, this suffering that we live in. So Master Wai says, well, I just keep the babies, you know, from crying. I give them the skillful means. So that's something that we, it's okay. You know, it's okay. But then ultimately he says, you know, this is just meeting each moment. It's very simple. It's quite simple. And it's also really hard. Don't you think? Mm-hmm. It's really hard. Practice is actually kind of hard. We like the idea of it, but the actually doing of it is tough. Partly it's tough because it's hard to discern what this network is that we're part of. It's hard to discern what's helpful. So there's even our best efforts, it's hard to know. And then, of course, there's that part about our small self that doesn't want to know. The part that wants to blame. The part that wants to be greedy. The part that gets angry. The part that does all the things that we do. That's being in this life. That's part of being in this life. Our practice isn't about rejecting those things, but it's about putting those things in a place, in their appropriate place, within the context of all of this. So this isn't about never being angry. It isn't about never being sad. It isn't about not wanting something. Can I tell the story about the statue this morning? Yeah. Matt says, let's see if I get the story. Matt says, I'm attached to the statue outside that they don't steal it. Because remember, the statue was stolen the last time we put a Kuan Yin out there. Somebody, a couple of days later, threw it in the back of a pickup truck, I guess, and drove off with it. And we were talking about that this morning, and Matt said, well, I'm attached, right? So I said, well, that's okay, because nothing's happened yet. You're attached in the abstract. So when you actually something does happen, then you can, you know, work with being attached to the statue. But there's this way in which it's okay. It's completely okay to be attached. Of course we're attached. We don't want somebody to steal the statue outside, so we're attached to that idea. But then if it happens, once again, if it happens, then we get to work with that problem, right? We get to work with a problem of attachment. Of course, we don't need that problem specifically because we all individually have tons of problems all of our own, right, that we can work on. So the Dharma teachings are about how we approach our lives, ways to work with our problems. Suzuki Roshi said about this lecture, he said once about this koan, once you realized Buddha nature within and without, there is no special way to follow for a student or any specific suggestion for a teacher. When there is a problem, that is the way to go. Okay, so he said, once you realize Buddha nature within and without, there is no special way to follow for a student. In other words, no special path or any specific suggestion from a teacher. When there is a problem, this is the way to go. This is a very obtuse statement in many ways because, first of all, once you realize Buddha nature, well, there's the crux. Like, just right there at the beginning of that sentence, what is realizing Buddha nature within and without? What is this way in which we completely engage with the totality of our experience? So that's a really tall order to say once you realize. It's kind of like, beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. So this way, what is realizing Buddha nature within and without? So, unless we can do that, we can't jettison the teachings. We can't jettison the practice. We can't even jettison our teacher's suggestions. So, here we are. Here we are in this messy life of ours in which sometimes we do realize Buddha nature within and without. Sometimes we don't realize Buddha nature within and without. Sometimes we respond skillfully. Sometimes we don't respond skillfully. We live in this messy world. We live in the form realm and the realm of desire. And so how we practice, how we look at our practice comes through addressing our problems. Because if we didn't have any problems, we wouldn't have any practice. If we didn't live in this messy world, we would have nothing to practice with. We would, and I've talked about this recently, we would be living in some other Buddha field that we probably wouldn't recognize. So we live in this Saha world, we live in this world with all of its problems, with all the things, the likes and the dislikes that we have to deal with. And that very place is where we practice, not some other place. That very place is where the rubber meets the road, not some other Buddha field, not some fantasy we have about it, not some desire we wish it were different. It's like right here is where our problems are. Right here is where our practice is. So for those of us who are attracted to this, we follow the Soto Zen path. Lots of good paths out there. Lots of great ways to work on skillful means. I would say every religion, you know, has something to say about how we live our lives in a wholesome way. Many philosophies have things to say about how we live our lives in a wholesome way. You know, it's like Buddhism doesn't have a corner on the market. But Buddhism, for some of us, has a corner on the market because it resonates for us, because it's a path that we want to follow, because it makes sense to us. And so if we're going to do that, then we need to actually follow that path. We can make something up if we want to, and it doesn't mean that it won't be wholesome. But, you know, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, card-carrying Soto Zen Buddhist. So I must say to you that from that perspective, personally, I'm attached. Where are you? I'm attached to this path. For myself. If you leave, it's okay. I'll let it go. But for myself, you know, I want to keep doing this thing. So for myself, it means I want to keep coming back and coming back to these teachings, these specific teachings that we do. I want to keep coming back and sitting zazen. I want to keep coming back and doing the forms. I want to keep coming back and revisiting the precepts and asking about them from the perspective of this school of Soto Zen. I want to keep coming back and say, how is it that I can understand my own life in the context of this network that I live in? So this realizing this Buddha nature, because Buddha nature is another word for this network. Dogen said, all things are Buddha nature. He said, Buddha nature is impermanence. It's this impermanence process of life. That's all impermanence is. It's process. It's this constant change that we often don't like because we get attached to how we want things to be because we're feeling comfortable and good about it, so we don't like change. But you know, if change didn't happen, we would be in deep doo-doo. That's a technical Buddhist term. We wouldn't be able to move our arm. You know, that's completely dependent upon all these chemical processes happening in our body, right? Our whole world is change. There's nothing that's not in flux. There's nothing that's not interconnected. There's nothing that isn't having, in some way, some kind of causal effect going on, some kind of way in which it's relating. This is Buddha nature. So the idea is that if we truly understand impermanence, we understand that everything is interconnected and interpenetrating. So just on a chemical level, we understand this. So from modern science, we know this is true. So that means that on a level of our everyday interactions, it means that we're all interconnected as human beings. Everything's interconnected. But from the perspective of our own difficulties, which usually have to do with other people, right? Our own difficulties. Or it has to do with our body or something like that. We're usually not out, you know, saying to ourselves, this parking lot's a difficulty. I've got to get rid of this parking lot. So we get attached about how other people are and what they're up to and what they're doing. So on that level, we say, okay, how can I actually relate to the idea that, or the fact of, that we are all Buddha nature? How can I respond to the people in my life as Buddha? Delusional Buddhas, but aren't I a delusional Buddha as well? So all these ways in which we want to reject, we want to say, no, I don't want that. I don't want you. I don't want this. So this way that, but wait a minute, that's all Buddha nature. That other person is Buddha nature. That other person is Buddha. That thing I don't want is Buddha. That thing that I want to get rid of is Buddha nature. So how can I be with that? How can I presence myself for that? That's one of the great things about Zazen. When we sit to Zazen, we come in, we say, oh, I'm going to sit for 10 minutes, or Saturday morning is 20 minutes. Usually during the week, we sit for 40 minutes. Or you sit a longer sitting. I'm going to sit down, and during that time, I'm going to be here and presence myself for the totality of my life as Buddha nature. Which means that parts of it I'm not going to like. I don't like every moment I'm sitting Zazen. Don't you have this problem? Aches and pains and your thinking and all this stuff. And then some part of me says, oh, I'm not supposed to think. I can't tell you how many people, as a Zen priest, right, people say, well, what do you do? You know, I'm a Zen priest. And immediately say, oh, I can't meditate. It's amazing. It's like people say, they make some assumption about the nature of my experience. And what goes along with that is oh, but I can't meet that experience. But they're not thinking, they don't actually know what I'm experiencing. What they know is what they think they are supposed to experience. Actually, it has nothing to do with me. So as a Buddhist teacher, I hear a lot, oh, I can't meditate. But that's because people have a preconceived idea about what it is that they're supposed to be doing. In Zazen, we do have instructions on how to sit Zazen, but a big part of the transformative process of Zazen is a willingness to sit down, is a willingness to actually be there. Through all the ups and downs of your mind, through all the ups and downs of your body, through all the ups and downs of your ideas about what's supposed to be happening. Because ultimately, when you sit down, on one level, as Dogen would say, Zazen sits Zazen. Has nothing to do with you. Zazen is sitting Zazen. The world is sitting Zazen. The world is worlding the world. The world is always worlding the world. Zazen is always sitting Zazen. But we're so busy, we don't know it. And even when we sit down to meditate, we're still busy, but we're there. We're just there. Saying, okay, I'm going to be present for this. I'm going to be present for, I don't want this. I'm going to be present for, wow, this is so good. You know? And then the next moment, ugh, this is so bad. This is impermanence. This is impermanence. This is Buddha nature. It's all wrapped up together. So, how, you know, this is how we realize this Buddha nature. This is how we, one way that we presence ourselves for it. We cannot find liberation except in the midst of our problems. There isn't any other place to find liberation. Right here in the middle of your own life, in all your own difficulties, is where liberation resides. It's not somewhere else. So the good news about that is that it's not somewhere else. The bad news about it is it's not somewhere else. No matter how fast we run, we will not find it. We really have to just stop and stay put. In the midst of all the yuckiness. But you know, the thing is, we have a lot of company. We have a lot of company. We have a lot of company in our misery. We have a lot of company in our joy. We have a lot of company, though, in a lot of people. Most people are trying to do the same thing. Most people. So we have that sangha. We have this sangha of humanity making their best effort, doing the best that they can do. I'm sure you can think of people that you say to yourself, oh, how could that possibly apply to that person? But for the most part, we're all making this effort the best that we can. We have the company, in Buddhism, we have the company of all the Buddhas and ancestors who preceded us. Part of this koan says, find this here. How many times have I gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you? How many times have I gone down into the Blue Dragon's cave for you? This is the ancestor saying, how many times have I practiced? How many times have I gone down into that place and met myself and met all of Buddha nature in that place for you? So in this way that we all practice for each other. How many times have you gone down into the blue cave? We think we're going for ourselves, and we are going for ourselves, but we're also going for all beings. You know? Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. I'll go down into the blue cave. The dragon's cave. The wisdom's cave. And we come back. Do you know Joseph Campbell talks about the path that people take, and that path comes about, and especially I think as adults, we all want to come back with that gift of our wisdom. You know, we all want to bring forward the wisdom that we have through the course of our lives. That is having gone down to the cave and met the blue dragon. So all the ancestors who've come before us, this case, Master Ma is unwell, saying, here, this is what I have to offer you. I've come from the cave. This is what I have to offer you. Every one of these cases, every one of the sutras, every one of our lectures, every time we talk to each other, every time we work with our problems, we're saving all beings. Shouldn't think about it that way. But this is this complete interconnected network. So all that work we put in not only helps us, but it also saves all beings. So it behooves us. It helps to stay. It helps to go into our own life. Be present for our own lives. This is where liberation is through our own problems. You should listen to your teacher. Listen to the ancestors. Find a path and do that path, because that path will be hard. If that path isn't hard, then it's not challenging you. And if it's not challenging you, you're not going down into the cave. You're not meeting the dragon. So this is what our practice says to us. It says, come down into this cave with a blue dragon and meet yourself and find out. Find this way, as Suzuki Roshi says, realizing Buddha nature. That's what we're being asked to do. And Master Ma says that we're doing it meeting each moment in our lives. Not some other moment, but this moment in our life. So practicing Buddhism is a first-hand experience. of this. That's what we're doing. I think I'll stop there. Thank you very much.